In this episode of the Project Management Podcast, we discover social intelligence and how it can help you connect and keep your team all moving in the same direction. Hello and welcome back to the Project Management Podcast at pm-podcast.com. I am Cornelius Fichtner. We are coming to you live from the 2019 PMI Global Conference in Philadelphia. And I'm sitting here outside in the hallways at a very wobbly table together with Kim Wasson. Hello, Kim. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Another conference, another interview. I think this is what it's starting to look like.
It is. I've been lucky to be able to present for a few years. I have a lot to say.
Yes. And what you have to say this year is social intelligence for project managers. And if I understand this correctly, this is sort of a preview to your upcoming book, right?
Yes, which also has the emotional intelligence concept. So.
Right. And yep. Just, you know, to give you a plug here, the book is called The Socially Intelligent Project Manager, The Soft Skills That Prevent Hard Days. I love that subtitle. The Soft Skills That Prevent Hard Days. So we have already established, obviously, social intelligence is a soft skill. What is it all about?
It's all about the connections between people. So it kind of, Daniel Goleman took off from emotional intelligence and took another kind of sideways look at the research and did more research to find emotional intelligence kind of inside out. It's us, it's oriented from us. And, social intelligence is about the connections between people and establishing them and maintaining them, which of course is what a project is built on.
And how does it relate to emotional intelligence?
It's on the same continuum. If you don't start by establishing the relationships and exercising emotional intelligence, it's very difficult to get to working with social intelligence. Mm-hmm. The emotional intelligence concepts kind of lay the groundwork for you to be able to get those connections working with your team.
Mm. And does it have a single abbreviation? Because emotional intelligence is either abbreviated as EI or EO. So do we have SI and SO?
Haven't seen it. I've only seen SI.
Okay.
But you never know. Could be SQ.
Who knows? So where do emotional intelligence and social intelligence interact and intersect, and how does that apply to project management?
So you start with emotional intelligence. You establish connections with your team, not only connections, but relationships with the individuals on your team. Once you've built that, you have the groundwork to start working on the connections, not only with yourself and the team, because the team is its own entity, but with the individuals on your team interacting with each other and bonding to be that single team entity that you want. Because all teams have a personality. We all know what happens when one person leaves and another person comes in, right? Your team is different. People are not interchangeable. And so you want to establish this team personality and get people working well together.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, emotional intelligence and social intelligence go hand in hand when we're talking about the project team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you build them concurrently.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we're going to look forward into one of the things you're going to be doing during the presentation. You're going to be doing a poll. But before we get to the poll, we have to look at the definition. Attunement. What is attunement?
Attunement is, I think of it as not active listening, but attentive listening, where you're actually present when someone else is speaking to you and mm-hmm. you are listening to what they say, and you're kind of banishing the stray thoughts, and paying attention and not doing what many of us do and think ahead to what we're going to say next while someone is still talking. It's just a very common human thing to do.
Yes, I do it.
Everyone does it.
Right. Mm-hmm. But we've kind of given away the core of what your exercise at the presentation is going to be like. So what are you going to ask the attendees to do?
When the attendees come in, I'm going to ask them to find someone quickly that they haven't met before, introduce themselves with first and last name, and say what they hope to get out of the session. And it's only going to take a minute or so. And then we're going to talk about definitions. And then we're going to come back.
Right. So you're going to talk about the definitions and then you're going to come back to this particular survey. And what will you ask them when you come
back? I'm going to ask them, and this is nice that we can do this in a survey because no one has to raise their hand and be embarrassed. Do you remember the name of the person that you introduced yourself to and why they're here? And I've asked them to respond yes or no, but also whether they went first or second, because I'm anticipating that the people who went first are going to remember names better than the people who went second because they've already thought about what they're going to say.
Exactly. And the person who's going second, while the other person is talking, you're thinking to yourself, okay, what is my name? What do I want to get out of this? You're not actually paying attention.
Exactly. Exactly. And I know that the response is going to be, if I'd known there was going to be a test, I would have studied.
That's the whole point.
That's the point. Any minute can be a test and you could miss something. So it's really important skill for us as project managers in particular to work on.
Overall, this is a cute little exercise. And yeah, everybody knows what's going to happen because, you know, everyone does it, right? So you expect this to be the result. Now, let's try to find out what the point is of you doing this. And I think we have to start with influence, right?
Yes. Yes. And we all know about influence because that's the definition of project management, responsibility, no authority. We're influence managers. And it's a very important concept in social intelligence world, which you find as basically the ability to understand the cues and what actions are going to happen and respond appropriately not only to what the other people involved are exhibiting and where you can see they're going, but also to the situation. Because what you might say to two people you've worked with for years in a closed room, you might say something very differently than you would say it in an open forum with people that you're just starting to work with, right? So the situation does play into it heavily. You need to be calm. This is actually a big part of the influence definition is, you know, when people are escalating, you're calm. You react calmly. You're the circle of calm. Once we start to react, then everybody else is going to start to react and it escalates. The escalation has to stop with us. So, you know, we do influence management, but this is kind of a little different look at the components from a social intelligence point of view that we have to have.
Yes, because when I read influence for the first time, you know, I was thinking back to the traditional, you know, who are the influencers on your team? Oh, there is the gray eminence in the background. You know, he's the big guy. And then we have the database administrator. Everybody goes to him.
Yep.
Because he knows everything. So, you know, there are different types of influence that these people have and authority, you know, to exercise their influence. But we're talking about a different kind of influence.
We
here,
are.
Right?
Although it all plays in one part of the definition is also social facility, which means we understand the social situation. That's one of the pieces of social intelligence is, and that's what we do, right? In our project ecosystem, we know who the influencers are. We know who to go to get things done. We know what the next step is. We know what's going to get us into trouble. And so it's a piece of social intelligence that's really intrinsic to our role.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we do, because you move then from influence on to the team, and
yes.
You talk about how to build the team. And in some cases, we don't know who the influencers are.
Right.
Walk us through that.
So I talk a lot about, and I do this even when I'm coaching, about hard skills and soft skills. We all know about hard skills. They're on the resume. You can test for them. They're a Java programmer. They're a master carpenter. But the soft skills are every bit as important. And those are really the connector skills, right? The leadership skills, the communication skills, the presentation skills. And based on our project, we're going to need certain ones of those skills, and we need to make sure that we have them.
Mm-hmm. From there, you move on to, I'm not sure if this is an exercise where you talk about the team makeup and you
yes.
do it first with team one and then team
yeah,
two.
Yeah, it'll be an exercise. So,
okay. So
what,
how does this work? And
what I've
point?
Done and the point of it is that I've set up a project where you have to hire three leads and there are two candidates for each lead.
Okay.
And the candidates are pretty much on hard skills equivalent, but the soft skills are different. And the project, I've got two different projects in here. And the soft skills are important to every project. And this illustrates where equal hard skill candidates are not equally appropriate for your project. And one, depending on your project, you may need different mm-hmm. soft skills. So it's really important to evaluate that. Whether you're hiring people or not, you need to know if you have holes in your team mm-hmm. with the soft skills. And you need to get them filled, get people education, get somebody else in there.
When you're hiring, though, How can you determine whether they have the soft skills they have?
That's a really good question. You do behavioral interviewing is pretty much the best way to figure that out, which means you present them with a situation that would demonstrate the skills and say, tell me about a time, not what would you do, but tell me about a time when this happened to you and what did you do? And that's the best way that I've found in all, well, certainly in interviewing, but in the research that I've done, to figure that out. Sometimes people have a microcosm problem that you can give someone to react to, and you can read it. But the behavioral interviewing does a pretty good job of exposing what they have and what they don't.
Okay. But in many cases, here's your team. Lead it. Right? And now you're like, okay, I know two of these people. I don't know four of the others. What do I do now? How do I find where my skills
are? We know our hard skills, right? But then this is where the emotional intelligence starts to kick in, right? You start to establish a business relationship with each of those people, and then you're going to have to watch their work. You're going to have to observe and see what they can do and where they can't. And when you've established a relationship, if they don't have a soft skill that you know they need, you have a really nice, easy opening to get them help, right? To say, how about if I put you with a mentor? How about if we send you to a class or whatever, because I think you're going to need this, without being threatening. Mm-hmm. So this is where all the relationship building starts to come in very handy.
Yeah. And then you show a movie clip. From the movie Stripes, where they have a fist fight.
They do. And
we're getting to the point here. So maybe you want to quickly reiterate what the movie is all about,
This part of the movie, there is a platoon of misfits who are going to have to show their skills the next day or have to go through basic training again. They've already put their sergeant in the hospital, and they're having a fist fight in the wee hours of the morning before they do this. And the character played by Bill Murray gets up and reminds them that they were all stupid enough to join the army, and we're soldiers, but we're American soldiers. And he draws them together with an example of the movie Old Yeller, which isn't really around much anymore. But he says, "Who's seen Old Yeller, and who cried when Old Yeller died?" And he puts his hand up first, because no one's putting up their hand. Pretty soon, everyone there has put up their hand. And so now there's this common point of interest, right? He's established common ground. It has nothing to do with what they're going to do, but it doesn't matter, because now they're feeling more like a team and less like a bunch of people who don't like each other, right? Because everyone on your team doesn't always like everybody. That's not the point. The point is establish a working relationship. So he does all of this and is a cheerleader for them and shows them how to do it, puts the goals in front of them. And I don't show the clip, but they pretty much kick butt the next day. They do a really great job of it.
All right. And then the next slide after that is titled, okay, so what was that about? And I'm going to read the bullet points out here quickly to explain this. You say the importance here is you want to find common ground, get a team identity, keep the goals front and center, build confidence, connect, and be a cheerleader. So this is the approach that he has chosen. Do you feel that this works generally?
Yes, I think that these are all really important pieces of building your team and keeping your team connected. Because when things get tough, they got to be able to depend on each other.
Right. What about the cheerleader bit? I'm personally a bit of an introvert. You might not know it here on the podcast, but
it doesn't have to be extroverted, but it just needs to be that you are on their side and they know that you are on their side, and you tell them that they can do it and you believe that they can do it, and you represent them to management, to other teams, as these are my guys. Guys is generic where I come from, right? These are my guys. This is my team, and they are great, and they will get this thing done. So it's that kind of a cheerleader. You don't have to be loud. You don't have to be in anybody's face. They just need to know that you are on their side and rooting for them.
All right. And start by finding a common ground.
Yes.
Yeah. Moving on to emotional contagion.
Yes.
What are we faced with here?
We've all seen this, and I always say one unhappy person can ruin your beautiful plan. And it's like that. People's emotions are contagious, and they've actually done the studies. So if you have someone who is grouchy and in a bad mood, and they're not motivated, they come in late to meetings, you're going to see it go through your team unless you can find a way to stop it. Now, the upside is if you have some really positive, happy people, that's contagious too. But where we usually see it, right, is someone's getting tired or burned out or isn't able to do something they want to do. And then pretty soon your whole team, right? They're dragging in late to meetings. They're not getting their work done. So it's a real concept and we need to watch for it and stop it.
How do we stop it?
A lot of it is, well, first you got to recognize it and then you've got to try to figure out the root cause. If you have a relationship, if you use emotional intelligence and you have a good relationship with each one of those people, you can pull them aside and say, you know, what's happening?
Hey, look, this is what's going on. This is how you are affecting the team.
Right. And along the cheerleader side, what can I do to help? Right. Sometimes what can I do to help is all someone needs to hear. Even if they don't want your help, they know that it's there. If they're unmotivated, there's a whole set of ways that you can find out what motivates them and start to apply that. But worst case, if they are just unhappy and they're not going to be happy, try to get them off your team.
Mm-hmm.
Or your team will turn toxic.
And then I would now continue by saying, let's talk about the elephant in the room. However, you choose a different metaphor. You say, let's throw the skunk on the table.
Yeah, it's an image, you know.
A smelly one.
A smelly one and one that you can't avoid. You have to address it. Part of the social intelligence study showed that humans are hardwired for truth. So we tend to tell when people are not being sincere. And so it's especially important for project managers to be sincere. I mean, you can't always tell everybody everything, right? There are confidentiality issues. Sometimes there are rumors and you don't want to panic your team or whatever. But in general, you want to be transparent. If there's a problem, say there's a problem because you can't find a solution unless you recognize that there's a problem. And you want your team to do this same thing. If you model it, they're going to do it. And this is also part of the self-presentation that's in this.
Okay. And then we have implicit bias, us versus them.
And these are biases against a group that are often hidden from the person who holds them, but they do drive behaviors. And in the U.S. in particular, we know the big four because they're often mandated by law: religion, gender, race, and sexual preference are the four big ones. But people can be biased against anything. You don't know, you know, what they've encountered in their past, what stereotypes they brought into.
You even do an exercise about this.
I do an exercise.
And what do people tell you what they're biased against?
Clothing.
Really? Okay.
Clothing. You know, people, you know, it's really interesting. If you wear the wrong clothing, piercings and tattoos.
Okay.
Makeup, hair color.
Seriously, hair color.
Hair color, purple hair. Some people are like, I can't deal with this. This person is not a serious person. Their hair is purple.
Interesting. Okay.
You know, it just can be anything. And so we need to watch for it and try to stop it, right? Not let it, not because the person who's the subject of it is going to be disenfranchised pretty quickly.
I had purple hair when I was younger, so this is kind of a shocker.
I did too. But it's amazing. It's probably less than it used to be because it's more common, but it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. We've been laughing quite a bit here during this interview.
Yes.
You also talk about the importance of fun. Why is fun important?
Fun is important, well, for a lot of, not the least of which is we spend a third of our lives working, and it really should be fun. But there is a study now that says that it takes 400 repetitions to create new synapse in the brain. So to learn something new, it takes 400 repetitions.
Yep.
If you add an element of fun, of play to that, it takes 400 to 12. If for no other reason, then your team's going to learn faster, they should be having fun. So even if you don't buy into it, it's really, it's a fact that fun makes people work better.
How?
But if you go to Silicon Valley, if you have a startup and you don't have a ping pong table or a foosball table or a video game or something, no one's going to go there, right? People work hard. They want to have fun when they're working. They want to be in an environment where that's okay to do. So people do definitely respond to it.
And how do you do it on a virtual team?
One of the things that I do, this will get people to your meetings on time. It takes seconds, right, to take a screenshot of something you think is funny, of a cartoon or the Harry Potter thing, right? It takes seconds. I build those up, put them on for a minute at the start of your meeting, and then take them off, right? People start coming to your meetings just to see that, but it also starts your whole meeting off differently, right? Everybody relaxes. And I do, I've got a picture in here of Picard with a face.
Yeah, the face palm. Picard, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you can do that in a serious situation, right? How does it affect people if they come into a war room, right? Something has gone terribly wrong. And while people are gathering, what they're seeing is Picard in a face palm. It's like, okay, and, you know, so the guns can go away and we don't have to blame anybody, right? But it's serious. It's not taking the problem lightly. It's just taking a step back from it and, you know, putting that element in to relax people. Same reason you start with the positives when you do a retrospective or a postmortem, right? Start with what went right because something always went right and everybody's attitude.
I also try to close on things that went right, or at least reiterate
yes.
them.
Yes, so people leave with that. Exactly.
There. Yeah. And you may have heard Harry Potter that Kim mentioned earlier, and you may go, wait, did I miss something? Did we talk about Harry Potter? So this is another screenshot that she is showing in her presentation. So there is this gentleman who posted this on Twitter, and he said, okay, so I am trying to be an adult and read a scientific paper, and then your wife does this. Okay, so this scientific paper has a really complicated title. It's The Influence of Climatic Legacies on the Distribution of Dryland Biocrust Communities. Okay. And what his wife has done, she has amended the title, and it now reads as follows. Harry Potter and the Influence of Climatic Legacies on the Distribution of Dryland Biocrust Communities. It is funny.
It's just, you know, you can put that on anything.
Yeah. But we also have to acknowledge it is not always smooth sailing. You know, no matter how much emotional intelligence, social intelligence, team building you put in, there are going to be rough times.
Things go wrong. And when that happens, the social and emotional intelligence factors really come in, right? So you want to focus on the process because you don't come in pointing fingers. There's almost always something wrong with the process, even if someone didn't do it right, right? They missed a checklist item. Well, it's a process that you print out the checklist and check it off. So when people are interrupted, they can remember. So start with the process, and work it from there. But if someone did something wrong, you can't ignore it, but you don't talk to them in public about it. Your team knows. They always know that you've talked to them about it. No one wants to feel like they have to pick up after other people. But if you do it in public, then everyone on the team wonders if they're going to be next, right? Someone going to yell at me in a team meeting next. So you do it in private, but you do take care of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have two exercises as you're winding down the presentation. One is called address, ignore, walk away, and the other one is maintaining balance. What is the importance of these two exercises?
Knowing when, this is part of that social facility and social recognition of the situation. Sometimes you have to address problems right away, right? If someone is hitting one of those big four legal things, for example, in their prejudices, you've got to deal with it. Sometimes you need to deal with it right away. Sometimes you can just ignore it because you know it's a one-time thing and addressing it it's not going to happen again and it's just going to dig a bigger hole, right? There are occasionally situations like that. And sometimes they hit your buttons and you have to walk away and regain control. That's the whole being calm thing. So you need to assess a situation and figure out, you know, which of those things is the correct answer for this situation because you don't want to make it worse. And so that's the exercise. The maintaining balance is really about risk analysis and risk management with the people part, right? I keep a risk register in my head for the people part. You don't really want people to see that, right? But if you have someone that you think is in danger of leaving the company or leaving the team, if someone has a vacation planned and you feel like, you know, your schedule is going to slip around and now we're going to have an issue with the vacation, you have to measure it the same way that you measure any other kind of risk. If I'm going to cancel someone's vacation, what are the effects on my project? Yeah, they'll be here. You know, will they be part of the team anymore? Or will they be so upset that we can't do it? Right. So it's really important. I've added, right, the four dials. We all know those four dials: schedule, cost, resource, and what's my poor quality. Now we've got another triangle of stuff: people, process, and product. What you're trying to produce, how you have to do it, and the people who are doing it. You've got to keep those three things in balance. And sometimes your project will take a little hit so that you have a productive person on your team for the longer term.
So far in our conversation, we have applied social intelligence to ourselves, to our team, but there are people above us in the hierarchy.
Yes.
So what about SI when we're managing up?
It's really important, and the concepts can really help us. So one of the things is never assume what your boss knows and doesn't know, and feed your boss enough information to make your boss comfortable. If she needs a lot of detail, give her a lot of detail. You don't want your boss wandering around your team giving them instructions when you're not there, right? That's a recipe for disaster. But if your boss knew everything about the project, then she wouldn't need you. So strike a balance and find out what works for the two of you. Don't drop, and no surprises. Don't hide things from your boss. If your project's in trouble, you really don't want them to sit down in a manager's meeting and have someone sit next to them and say, hey, I hear that project's on the floor, and they didn't know about it. And there's a lot that you can do about, this is another risk management thing, right? So instead of, you know, if your boss comes to you with a project decision that you didn't make, instead of exercising a career limiting move, like that's a stupid idea, which is what's going on in your head, right? Why did you do that? But they don't know everything that you know about the project, right? So what I usually do is I do a risk analysis between their, what I call a suggestion, and at least one other option that I think is a better option. And I'll run through the whole risk analysis and give it to them. And one of two things will happen. They'll say, oh, I didn't know those things. Let's go with your solution. Or they either know something you don't know or someone has mandated the other solution and they'll say no, but then you've already done your risk analysis. Mm-hmm. So you've lost nothing and you've done what is a non career limiting move, but made your opinions known with the basis behind them. So you've thought them through. So.
All right. Let's move into the key takeaways. What have we learned today from our conversation?
I hope we've learned. Teams have their own personality, so you not only have to connect with the individuals, you have to understand how your team is built. And that social intelligence tools can help you understand it, build it, and improve it. So these are real tools. And it's a lot like risk management. So we have something that we can fall back on that's more process-like for folks who are a lot more comfortable with process than people, right? Some project managers lean toward the people side, some people lean toward the process side. But there are processes, even though, you know, sometimes it's like nailing Jell-O to a tree, right? It just changes from minute to minute. But the tools can still help you and both the social intelligence and the risk management. Mm-hmm.
And then final question, now what? What should our listeners do, you know, just as a first step maybe?
I would challenge them to just pick one thing that you'll change tomorrow using social intelligence that you think will help your team and your project.
Excellent. Kim, thank you so much. Third interview at a conference in a row. Will we see you next year?
I hope so.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you so much.